Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. And listen, this next segment is going to cover a set of really sensitive issues, suicide and bullying, that may be hard for you or may not be suitable for young listeners. 10 years ago, 15-year-old Phoebe Prince was found dead in her home in South Hadley, Massachusetts. She died by suicide after months of relentless taunting and severe bullying at her high school. Here's Prince's mother speaking with CNN in 2011.
No matter what I did, no matter how many times I called the school, no matter how many people I might have spoken to there, that she didn't stand a chance there.
Six teenagers at South Hadley High School were charged with criminal offenses for bullying Prince. And the school was also criticized for how it handled the situation and for not intervening more to stop the harassment. Kayla Neri, one of the six young people charged in connection with the bullying-related suicide of Prince, apologized in court on May 4th, 2011.
I am sorry for the unkind things I said to others about you. I am sorry about the unkind posting on my Facebook page. But mostly, I am sorry for January 14th of 2010.
Prince's death changed the way schools think about bullying, and it was part of what spurred the state legislature to pass an anti-bullying bill that had failed to gain traction. Her death by suicide still weighs on the residents of South Hadley. Deb Caldieri, Phoebe's Latin teacher, who says she was one of Phoebe's mentors, still has strong memories of the 15-year-old. Here she is earlier this week.
Phoebe, the very first day, came bouncing into my classroom and said, "So when are we going to learn Latin?" She was a bundle of energy.
And hey out there, if you or someone you know is struggling, you can reach the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 273-8255. There's also the Samaritan statewide hotline at 1-877-870-4673 or HOPE. Joining me now for more is WBUR Edify reporter Carrie Young. Welcome, Carrie.
Hi, Tiziana.
And you spoke with Deb Caldieri for your story looking back on this tragedy 10 years ago.
I did, yes. Yeah, she has such strong, fond memories of Phoebe. And so, you know, it really paints a picture of just how hard this news hit the town and hit her, really. Even 10 years later, she says she still mourns Phoebe's death.
So remind us of what happened and why this incident in South Hadley has had such a profound impact on the broader community.
Yeah, I mean, like you mentioned, this was a 15-year-old girl. Her and her mom had just moved to the United States, had just moved to Western Massachusetts from Ireland, and she was starting the school year. Shortly after the school year started, she got in a brief relationship with a football player at the South Hadley High School. And pretty soon after that happened, she became the target of really, really intense bullying. I mean, and that included things from, like, repeated name-calling. She was stalked. She was the subject of threats, both in school, like in person, over text message, even as we heard on social media, Facebook. And even one day close to when she died, there were reports that a group of kids followed her home in their car and threw a can at her. And it was shortly after that that she was found. She had hanged herself, all because of, you know, this relentless bullying. Now, this did have such a profound impact. It made national, international news. But I think the impact also came because it came so quickly after another prominent suicide just down the road in Springfield.
Yeah, so that is 9 months earlier, Western Massachusetts, 11-year-old boy Carl Walker Hoover. So talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, Carl Walker Hoover, not even a teenager. He faced also relentless bullying. His mom says he was called names. He was called gay. People told him that he acted like a girl. He also hanged himself. And, you know, that really did, between those two suicides, I was told by several experts while researching this story, it kind of created this watershed moment for the state, for educators, to really kind of sit up and listen and realize how significant and how dangerous bullying can actually be. And you really saw kind of how seriously people did begin to take it after that, especially after Phoebe Prince's death. You know, like you mentioned, there were charges filed against those six teenagers. Eventually, they did reach plea agreements with the DA. They served probation and some community service. But, you know, that didn't happen with Carl Walker Hoover's case. So we saw that change in the way
Even from one to the next.
Yeah, we saw that change from the way people looked at bullying and how serious it could be.
How else did it change the state's thinking?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned earlier, it did spur lawmakers to move along an anti-bullying legislation that had been kind of languishing up on Beacon Hill. And that did a couple of things. It made schools actually develop an anti-bullying policy. It made it so that training was required for students and teachers. And it also required that teachers and educators in general, if there was a report of bullying, that parents be notified. That was also amended a little bit later in 2014 to add a data collection requirement to that.
All right, so we're a decade later. You went and visited both Western Massachusetts and specifically South Hadley this week. How have things changed there?
Yeah, so to find out that answer, I went one of two ways here. I first reached out to the school because I was hoping to get in the school to talk to kids, to talk to administrators, guidance counselors, and that kind of thing. So I reached out to Superintendent Diana Bonneville, and she declined my request for an interview, but she did send a statement, and she said, "This incident no longer defines who we are." She added, "Over the last 10 years, that the district has really worked diligently to work past this tragedy, incorporating restorative practices and really stressing this community of respect, kindness, and acceptance." But I really, you know, I wanted to hear from kids, too. So the superintendent told me I was not allowed on campus, but I felt, like I said, it was really important to hear what the environment was like now from someone who actually lives it. And so I found some students on their walk home very close to the school, and a few of them didn't go on the record, but they said they had been bullied, that still does happen there. But they said, to the school's credit, when they did report it, their problems or those issues with bullying had stopped, at least with these few kids that I talked to. There was also another set of kids that I saw, or 17-year-olds, really, that I saw walking back from school. They did go on the record, and they said they remember very well. They were kids at the time.
Yeah.
They were in elementary school
Seven
when Phoebe Prince
died.
Yeah. And but they said they really do remember that in school and how the school kind of reacted, and you could tell they were taking it more seriously. They said that they saw posters going up around campus, and now they go to these very, very regular assemblies. So Philip Wegman was one of the 17-year-olds that I spoke with, and here's how he describes what happens inside one of those assemblies.
Here's the definition of bullying. Don't bully. If you see bullying, report it, which doesn't do anything for everyone because we've heard the same message forever. Generally, people don't listen to the anti-bullying things. They just know better to pick fights. There's not really immaturity anymore.
And I was also curious to see, you know, in Phoebe Prince's case, it was kind of common knowledge that she was the subject of bullying among a lot of different students. But Philip's friend, Maxime Ferdman Hayden, also 17, he said, in his knowledge, he doesn't know of any instances like that. And here's sort of how he describes the environment in school.
There's a lot of fighting, I think, with less mature, younger kids. Mostly no repeated offense. There isn't, like, kids that are, like, bullied more. It's, like, a lot more healthy.
So a sense that there's at least some start to change.
It appears that way, yes. So far in the district, it appears that they are taking it very seriously.
All right. That's WBUR Edify reporter Carrie Young. I really appreciate it, Carrie. Thanks.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's dig into more of what the picture looks like today. In Studio 3 here now is Nancy Rappaport. She's a child psychiatrist and an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. She also worked with school systems in Massachusetts as a consultant for the last 25 years. Dr. Rappaport, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So 10 years. You just heard, you know, the reminder of that very difficult story from Carrie Young. Both Phoebe Prince and Carl Joseph Walker Hoover. How are you reflecting on this today?
Well, the most important piece that I think in terms of educating our listeners is to let them know that bullying doesn't equal suicide, and that bullying is definitely something which now, 10 years later, we understand the severe consequences and how it can impact kids many years later. But
Do you mean bullying doesn't have to equal suicide? Is that what you mean when you say bullying doesn't equal suicide?
Yes, that we want the message to be to children that if you are being bullied, the answer isn't to kill yourself.
There we go. Okay, I understand.
Yeah.
All right, and we've heard some of the big changes to Massachusetts state law. You've been working with schools for 25 years. Which of those changes do you think has had the most impact so far?
The most important part probably would be around the training and the expectation that staff and students are given an opportunity to learn how to respond to bullying and the expectation that we don't just do piecemeal kinds of interventions. That said, there is a cautionary aspect. What happens often in schools is we have the flavor of the month. So we have a situation, say, for example, right now with vaping.
Yeah,
and
there you go.
The school committee comes together, parents are anxious and alarmed. All of a sudden you have grant money flooding into schools because vaping is a crisis. And with bullying, it was in the late 1990s with Columbine that people became really concerned about bullying because
this is the Colorado high school mass shooting.
And the thought was that these were two ostracized kids, and if we could just create environments that were more responsive to kids, we wouldn't have school shootings. That's a gross oversimplification about what happened. But we are, as a country, relatively new to figuring out how to do systemic interventions. It was in Norway being the big one with Olaus's intervention, where there was much more of a systemic effort through the whole country. Massachusetts, though, still is a leading edge in having said, we want to come up with an advanced policy that allows us to create an expectation of reporting bullying and thinking about how to mobilize when there is bullying.
Are the changes that the state has made in the state education system, are they enough? Is there more that needs to be done?
Definitely.
Like what?
The major problem where bullying ends up seeping in its insidious way is on unsupervised areas. So it's on the playground, it's in the cafeteria, it's on the school bus. And there are still situations in schools, and I work with schools and have tremendous respect for how hard educators work, but often parents have to be a really squeaky wheel, and they have to repeatedly come back and sound the alarm
when their children are experiencing bullying.
And sometimes what happens is schools can resort to detentions, expulsions. Part of what I do is what are called safety assessments, threat assessments in school settings. So it's actually doing in-depth looking at when a student is acting in either provocative ways or repetitive incidences that are harmful to other students. And if you do knee-jerk suspend detention or vilify the child who may be bullying, and there's always a movement between bullying and victim, that gives you a false sense of confidence. So you really want to understand what's going on and how we can make it different. And that doesn't always happen. Sometimes kids get suspended and then they come back, and there's not a lot of attention to how they come back into the school. And as Carrie mentioned, the restorative part. How do you reconcile when children have been cruel to each other?
Explain for listeners what restorative means.
I know all these words: trauma-sensitive schools, restorative. They're all buzzwords that are hard to grab onto. Restorative basically means if you've done something to harm another person, how do you make it up, and how do you do it in a way that's heartfelt? So I'll give you an example. Say there's a student who is merciless at calling a kid with special needs a name in the hallway, repeatedly being told not to do it, and they're still doing it. They get the suspension. It doesn't really hold water. And I remember a teacher talking about having really tried to understand this student's,
the young person who was doing it.
And what came out was that they had a child in their family that also had special needs. And there was an expectation that this student would figure out how to be respectful. Didn't have to be best friends, but needed to be respectful in the hallway. And that grew into him first starting to say hello, then starting to do activities in the classroom and making a turnaround. So it's going from being punitive to saying, we have a responsibility as a community to build a safe community. So that's restorative justice.
Let's talk about community culture in schools for a minute. We spoke with Andre Ravenel, former school superintendent of Fitchburg Public Schools. He's now the executive director of Teachers 21, which is an education nonprofit. And he said he felt like it comes down to school culture. He says he felt encouraged by what he's observed at some of Fitchburg schools.
Fitchburg High School, you know, has something called the Red Raider Way. And the Red Raider Way incorporates all of these kinds of things, kindness, respect for one another, honesty, all of those types of characteristics that if infused and if they become the foundation of a school culture, then will lead to a school culture where bullying is A, not as present as it would normally be, and B, it's not acceptable.
In your experience, do you agree with that?
Andre's right on the mark on a couple of things. One is the idea of a culture of safety, and it starts with the school adults. So many times when you look at school shootings and you take a close look at it, sometimes there have been situations where adults don't feel safe for sounding the alarm and saying something's terribly wrong.
What does it mean an adult doesn't feel safe to sound the alarm? Retribution? Or
yes. Okay. A sense of being either mocked, marginalized, not listened to, and that has to be addressed on. And again, when we go back to restorative justice, or however you want to talk about it, that, you know, there was another. I do a fair amount of teaching with educators, and there was another example of a principal who talked about a school adult who actually had been had spoken in a way that wasn't appropriate. He challenged a student. The student was escalating, and he said, "You wouldn't dare to destroy the classroom." And then the child went on to destroy the classroom. And what this principal did, which was a very brave thing, was he said to the staff member, "You need to go home and think about what just happened." And when they had a meeting afterwards, what the staff member was able to do was to own his behavior and then have a meeting with the student to discuss it. That kind of discussion can be transformative, and that's the kind of thing that we need to have in schools.
All right. And once the adults in the school, to use your words, feel safe, how does that translate into the children's behavior changing?
So a couple of things. If sometimes you have, and again, it's said with respect to schools, but sometimes you have toxic adults in the school who may provoke kids. If you have a school culture that understands that both holding other adults accountable and also where if you have a very provocative escalating kid, that there's a culture where you spare an adult and you say, maybe you need a break right now. And you have that. So that's Andre built that kind of culture is what he's saying, where school adults are, there's an expectation that you treat each other with respect. And then there's a parallel process that happens with the students.
Okay, I'm going to have to go to a break soon. But before I do, I want to play a clip for you from Ashley Dubay, the director of counseling in the Dedham Public Schools. Because she says over the past decade working in schools, she's noticed that cyberbullying has actually decreased among high school students, but is emerging as a bigger problem with younger students.
So I've just noticed a trend that by sophomore, junior, senior year of high school, they've learned that electronics will be a part of my learning and life forever. So how do I make sure that I'm using this appropriately? And they've been able to filter a little bit better, right? I think our younger students now, you know, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, right, is where we see more vulnerabilities.
So we know there's a social media dimension to this. And with this plethora of apps and opportunities for younger and younger and younger people to have it come out of their heads and into the sphere, how do we begin to work with younger people about bullying?
Well, the first thing is I don't want to take away the power of parents. And I think parents need to be having these kinds of incredibly important discussions with their kids and that they help their child understand that what you put online is permanent and can be seen and can get you in a lot of trouble. So I've done safety threat assessments with kids who may have, in a moment when they were incredibly frustrated, say, I could be the next Columbine. and create a firestorm and torpedo their education. So having parents and schools teach kids about the power of what they communicate online is super important.
That is Nancy Rappaport. She's a child psychiatrist and an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School and the author of The Behavior Code, a practical guide to understanding and teaching the most challenging students. Thanks, Dr. Rappaport. And listeners, if you or someone you know is struggling, you can reach the National Suicide Prevention Line at 1-800-273-TALK and the Samaritan Statewide Hotline at 1-877-870-HOPE. Stay tuned. There's more ahead. I'm Tiziana Dearing. This is Radio Boston.